I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Today is Friday, February 9th, and this is Celtics Beat on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider of audio-video coverage of the Boston Celtics. I'm Adam Kaufman. Episode 558 features NBC Sports Boston's Chris Forsberg.
And I'm Evan Valenti. Today's show is powered by FanDuel. Get $200 in bonus bets with a $5 winning bet at FanDuel.com/Boston.
What's up, everyone? Welcome in. How do I start this thing, baby? Jaden. I feel like anyone with the last name Springer. You need to go right to sort of that reality TV feel. You know, NBC Sports Boston recently had its Celtics trade deadline special, obviously, mm-hmm. does it each and every year. But, I didn't watch because I wanted this. Yes. I wanted this to be the trade deadline special because we went to NBC Sports Boston.
What a way to talk up your guest.
Yeah, we got Chris Forsberg here with us. Evan Valenti, Adam.
Yeah, this guy was on TV yesterday, but I didn't watch. It wasn't worth my time. Go ahead.
I didn't watch because I wanted all the thoughts here.
All right, good, because I'm just recycling everything I said yesterday, but go ahead.
But that's the beauty of it. I wouldn't know.
There you go.
I wouldn't be any the wiser. You could direct quote yourself. You could plagiarize yourself like crazy. It wouldn't make any difference except to the people, obviously, that are out there listening or watching that tuned in for both. You know what it is? And I've used this term with you a lot, just playfully at this point in time. I use the term oversaturation. Mm. I think it is the oversaturation of Celtics content now across the board. Sure. Like it, I mean, there are, we talk about this every couple months or so it manages to come up with somebody. There must be 3,500 Celtics podcasts just in market now.
Yeah, it feels right. It is incredible. Like it's just I'll tell you this. This was the crystallization this week for me. When Jalen got announced to the dunk contest, I started thinking about like ways that he could pay homage to Gerald Green and like, you know, go turn back the clock on dunk contest. So I was like, well, we need to get Kristaps to Indy and he's going to do a cookies and cream dunk where like Kristaps holds a glass of milk and he dunks the Oreo and he dunks the ball. And then Dan Greenberg from Barstool had already used the same exact tweet. And I was like, there's no more original ideas out there. Like if we're both thinking of like how preposterous of an idea for a dunk contest, and that's already been on Twitter, then I'm just going to, I just need to stay away from everything. We all have the same ideas.
Since that is official now, by the way, that Jaylen Brown is going to participate in the dunk contest, I am curious as to your perspective, because there are, it seems like kind of a mixed bag. You know, I've heard from people or I've seen on social media people saying, you know, it's, you know, like this is awesome. This is exactly what the dunk contest needs. This could be the thing that brings it back because finally we have some star power attached to it in the sense it, and that's not even to say like Jaylen Brown is this superstar. I think he's a star. He's an all-star. I wouldn't put him in that superstar category, but certainly in terms of names.
What more do you need? Like all NBA? Put some respect on the man's
name.
But
it's a me problem. Like I have a very, you got to be like a top 10 player in the league to be considered, you know, a superstar in my mind. Like,
but I get where you're going. So I would say
consensus top 10 player. But putting that aside, he's certainly the highest paid player. you know, there's real money attached to the dunk contest now with Jaylen coming in. And that is, for the league, a big deal. I have, though, heard the opposite side, which is Jaylen is making
he's going to
embarrass himself because he's just not an electric dunker. He's obviously had some great posters in his career, but in terms of, you know, sort of overall athleticism and creativity and doing some things out there that, like, you know, the Zach LaVines and the Blake, you know, the Aaron Gordons or Blake Griffins or whoever else can do, like, Jaylen's just not that guy.
Yeah, he has not dunked over a Kia during a game.
Right.
So, which would be difficult, but no.
The hood of a Kia. Like, the hood of a Kia. Very important distinction.
Yeah.
12-year-old Forsberg would have loved this, right? Like, the adding some legitimate star power to the dunk contest. I do yearn for the days of Dominique and Michael Jordan, but I also understand that 20-something years later, 30 years later, we've run out of dunks. There's just only so much we can do, even as guys jump higher and further and such. But I'm okay with it. I'm not going to sit here and, like, worry about injury and stuff like that. You know,
yeah.
They do silly dunks in practice every day. Hopefully he gets creative with it. That's all I help. I think the entire All-Star Saturday night used to be a moment when I was a kid, and now it doesn't feel like it's much of a moment at all. I'm going to All-Star, and I will be leaving before All-Star Saturday night. So I don't know, and I won't be torn up about it. So I hope that they find a way to – I hope he puts it in the work beforehand. I hope that he makes his dunks on the first tries because, like, when they do it 94 times, it gets repetitive. Mm-hmm. But I'm all for it because when you look at the list, and no disrespect to Mac McClung and the other Toppin brother, but I guess some disrespect to Mac McClung and the other Toppin brother, because, like, I don't know, it just doesn't get me excited to watch the event. We need guys that have recognition and star power.
To that point, though, it's sort of like what this could mean. Do you think this, you know, if things go well for Jaylen, I don't even mean win. I just mean, like, he goes and, like you're saying, is fine, doesn't embarrass himself, has a good time with it, maybe brings in a guest star like a Porzingis or whoever else. Do you think this opens the door, you know, for future years of getting some more name recognition in the tournament?
I would be fascinated. I don't know. I don't know if guys are that interested. Someone has to rekindle it. And let's hope Jaylen performs well enough that others say, hey, that's cool, I want to do that. And I don't know. Like, who are the superstar high pick? Anthony Edwards? I'm trying to think of, like, up-and-coming guys, like, going towards the top 10 that I want to see in a dunk contest. I don't know. I guess I would just take anybody at this point who can
John
bring
Morant?
Some. Sure.
It could, I mean, not
be,
this
could,
year,
could be a great way to rehab the reputation, too, right? Like, when after you go through what he did. So, yeah, I'd be all for it. Like, every event needs a little rebirth or whatever to get it back. I don't know. Maybe just have Larry Bird come in and torch everybody in a warm-up coat and the 3-point contest and bring back how much we love all those.
Your issue is, like, most of the guys that are really good at dunking, like the artists, the dunk artists, like, they're not all-stars. You missed your opportunity, like, trying to make Aaron Gordon an all-star. He would have done it if he was named under the all-star team. And, you know, Zach LaVine, you know, just not going to see that guy anymore. Like, Mac McClung can really dunk. Like, I'm not trying to sit here and say, like, Mac McClung isn't awesome at dunking. The guy's awesome.
He had fun last year
at dunking.
Unfortunately, like, he's just a nobody in terms of the NBA. He's not even in the NBA.
But, like, think about it this way, right? The Zach LaVine, Aaron Gordon dunk off, which was the best dunk contest these eyes have ever seen. Those two guys are, like, relatively, like, you know, they weren't really, like, superstars yet. Like, neither guy's really a superstar. But they weren't really huge names outside of the draft junkies that follow it. Like, what was Zach LaVine most famous for before that dunk contest? His face at the draft when he got drafted by the Timberwolves. Like, he was like, oh, dang, I got to go to Minnesota. That's not great. Like, Aaron Gordon, like – like,
now he would, like, kill to be in Minnesota, right?
Right? They'd be awesome. Yeah, hell, it'd be, like, the Anthony Edwards pick is an interesting one because, like, that's a guy who's super athletic and could probably do some fun stuff in the air. Ja's a great, another one that guy can get to jump out of the gym. But, like, most of the time, your all-star guys, like, aren't guys like that. And so you're having to find solutions in other places. I do give Jay a lot of credit for being – like, hey, like, I'm an all-star, I'm a star, I'm an all-NBA player, you know, I'm going to do this because he's the first one, it feels like, in a long time that's done it. But a lot of times the best dunkers aren't those guys. Like, they work on other parts of their game. Like, Jason Tatum, like, I think somebody asked Tatum at the end of the last game if he was going to do the dunk contest ever. And he was like, nah, I'm all set. Like, he's working on other stuff. Like, you know, he doesn't need to do that. So it's hard. I give Jalen a lot of credit. He's not going to win this. I'd be impressed if he did. I think it's going to be a kind of show. I think Mac will do great. I heard Jaime Hawkins can jump. I've been told by sources that Jaime can jump, and we'll see with Jacob Toppin and see if it's hereditary or not. We'll find out. But, you know, it's just the best dunkers, you don't find out are great dunkers until the contest. Like, nobody knew Mac McClung was going to be awesome until he did his, like, first dunk. You're like, oh, okay, this guy's awesome, yeah. You know? So it's going to take some time. It just stinks that there's no star power anymore that way.
Well, it's the dichotomy of the thing at this point in time that gets hammered home each and every year, to where the judges of the contest are so much bigger in name, stature, reputation than the participants. You know, you would like that to be kind of level. I mean, yeah, you're going to have legends of the game that participate as judges. That is an annual expectation. But how about maybe some... We don't have to pull a guy up from the G League to participate in the NBA dunk contest, who also happens to be the reigning champ. That would be a success if you want to attempt to bring this thing back. We're just so
to be fair, I did not fight when Craig Hodges had returned for the 3-point contest when the Bulls had already cut him. So, like, I get defending your title and all that. I was a big Craig Hodges guy. So I will not throw bricks at glass houses or whatever that is.
So that's our brief little, I guess, all-star related discussion. I guess as we get just a little bit closer here, we'll have more time to discuss that and certainly react to Jalen's performance when that comes along later this month. But the reason I didn't begin, guys, with the trade deadline is in large part because it wasn't overly eventful for the Celtics. Yes, a lot of, you know, players changed homes across the league. Most of the bigger names, it had already happened. Like, there was no one of, let's say, Pascal Siakam's level that moved on deadline day. You know, a couple of the biggest names like Gordon Hayward, but he's injured and he's always injured. He goes to OKC. I think if he gets right, can stay on the floor, he could be a good fit there. You know, Buddy Hield is an interesting one, but these are kind of the biggest names. You know, it was a lot of back end, middle of the rotation kind of guys, and the Celtics, no exception. The big difference is a lot of those teams need more star power. The Celtics obviously were looking for those types of guys. So they bring in a couple days ago Xavier Tillman. They follow that up with the guy I mentioned before, Jaden Springer. And effectively, they're coming in to hopefully just be better versions of Lamar Stevens and Delano Banton. And I like it. I mean, I don't see how you could argue against the moves. The Celtics didn't give up anything of consequence. You know, no players went out the door who are actually, you know, nightly participants for this team. No first round picks or anything like that. Just some second rounders. That's why you've got them. And so now it's depth, and it's judging how these guys are going to fit in ultimately. And Ev, I think what you brought up before in terms of, you know, we were talking about, I can't remember at this point in time, this was right before we started or since the show began, but we were talking about Brad Stevens and how he is as an executive and fit. And I think if there's one thing, Chris, and you've been around this team for, you know, a long time for various outlets at this point in time, you have covered multiple regimes, obviously, but I think if there is one kind of clear distinction between Brad Stevens, the president of basketball operations, versus Danny Ainge in that role, who was excellent, by the way. This is not Danny slander. This is just talking about a difference. I think Danny was always a little more fixated on the name and, you know, the splash, the full throttle of it all, to reference Tom Werner. Whereas Brad is really just kind of trying to put a puzzle together. And he's looking for the best fit to complement the rest of the team. And these two guys who, you know, Tillman's got more of an offensive upside than Springer, certainly, but they're both just really strong defenders. And this team looking to lean into its defense here, recognizing how important that is for a stretch run, certainly for the playoffs. I'm impressed. I'm impressed by the job that Brad has done, continues to do, the way he telegraphs his moves, and yet simultaneously works in the shadows is fascinating to me. And I like what he did. I think it was an effective trade deadline, and they still have the open roster spot for when the buyout market comes along.
Yeah, and so we'll see. Like I think you can definitively say that the Xavier Tillman and Jaden Springer highlight reels are more impressive than the Delano Banton and Lamar Stevens one. Now, like, Lamar Stevens is a weird case. Like, I know you don't want to talk too much about the guys going out, but I thought for sure he'd get more of a run here, and it just never happened. He was a starter for much of the year for a very good Cleveland team last year and brought, like, that defensive grit. His offensive limitations kept him off the court. So when you start looking at Tillman and Springer, I think you'd say, well, they've got some offensive limitations too. Will they necessarily be able to sort of carve out roles? Can you have non-shooters on the floor if you're going to play in Joe Mazzulla's offense? And yet, undeniably, you watch all the highlight blocks and you watch Tillman defend against Anthony Davis last year in the playoffs. You watch Springer defend against Steph Curry and Luka Doncic this past week. And there's at least potential there. And one thing me and I remember even from, I think it was 2 years ago when they got Derek White, Brad stressing afterward was, as the Celtics start building this monster payroll, they have yearned to have sort of this influx of young talent. And let's face it, like, you've had to sacrifice a lot of first round picks in order to do that. Well, you just added, you know, at least in Springer's case, a former first round pick who you're hoping will develop. He's still only 21. There's still a lot of time to tap into what he's got. Now it's on the Celtics to develop that and supplement their expensive core. So, you know, we'll see. I think it does add a little bit of intrigue to the final 31 games here. If Tillman gets out there once he's fully healthy and can give you a little something, especially on nights that Al rests or Kristaps Porzingis rests, could be fun. But I don't know. You know, I don't think you should factor them in heavily to what might happen this season. But each one will be here potentially long. I don't think you make the trade for Tillman if you're not pretty convinced that you can use his bird rights to retain him. And Springer has another year, but after that, you'll be able to think about retaining him as well. So it's on the development staff here to get them to a place where they're more definitive role players than necessarily maybe on the surface of a team that is going to really lean on their top eight right now.
Yeah. And you look at, like, okay, why couldn't Lamar Stevens, you know, touch the floor? Well, you have Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown also playing his position. Sam Hauser provides something different. He's an excellent three-point shooter, ball mover, and defensively he holds up more than he doesn't. I love watching Sam move his feet. He does a great job by positioning. He's better than people think he is. Lamar Stevens, unless you're shooting the basketball really well, is fighting with O'Shea Brissett. And what we've seen with O'Shea Brissett over the past couple of weeks is bring him to the game and he changes the energy of the game. You know, sometimes you need a guy like that. And Brissett is an automatic energy flipper, regardless of whether he's shooting well, defending well. He's always rebounding the basketball well on both. Well, he's giving the effort, you know, whether if he might not get them all, but he's going to jump after it against four guys that are wearing the other team's jersey. He's going to get in there. And that's valuable. Making the most of his time, right? It's, you know, it's not like Lamar Stevens didn't get a little bit of a shot. He did. The leash was short, as it is with a lot of those guys, and Brissett popped a little more than Lamar did, and that's why they're out the door, right? You bring in Tillman. Tillman is obviously big insurance for Al and Kristaps, and even Cornette, who's been a little banged up this year, but also a little bit different than Cornette, you know, in terms of big insurance, right? He's going to be someone that you can throw out there against the bigger guys, the Giannis's, you know, if they get to play Jokic or some other big, name them, he's going to be able to at least make it difficult for them. The Springer one is a little bit more interesting just because of the fact that, again, his age, the fact that he's been in the pro system for 2 years and yet would still be one of the youngest guys drafted in this upcoming draft class, which, yeah, I think is extremely valuable. Something I didn't think about in listening to Brad talk about, it's clearly they thought about, hey, you know, he's essentially the same age as the guys getting drafted come up this year, but he's been at least, you know, a professional for 2 years. That's valuable. We should look into that, tap into that. But again, the defensive upside is pretty clear here, and he provides you something different than Peyton Pritchard. I think the elephant in the room, so to speak, over the past couple of weeks is against some of these better teams. You look at that Clippers game as a great example. Denver, another one. You know, towards the end of that Denver game, Pritchard's out there, Al's not, and it's like, ah, they're getting killed. They got to make the swap eventually, and then Joe, of course, calls in Al for Pritchard, and things are a little bit easier. They need a guy that can come off the bench and defend guards. You know, you can't just have Drew and Derek go out there and do it all for 48 minutes. You're going to need somebody else, and it's valuable to have that in the back pocket, right? They're not going to – they get to the playoffs, six, seven guys are playing. Like, I don't know if Hauser's going to get off the bench when they really need it. I don't know. I would prefer he did, but you know there's six there. We'll see with Pritchard and we'll see with Springer. Like, I don't know. But it's at least a little bit of insurance there, but he provides something different than Pritchard does. Pritchard's a great offensive player. He's been spectacular this year. I love the way he's just confident with his shot. He's moving the basketball. He's trying to get into the paint. But he can't defend that well because he's short. And it's not because he's not trying. He's trying his ass off, but he's just not tall enough. Springer gives you a little more, you know, a little more length, a little more height, a little more girth. He's excellent. So it's just going to be – why not? Why not try it? They don't have a guy like that, and it costs them nothing. That's the crazy – it costs them nothing, really. And when you're working on the margins like the Celtics are, there's not like, oh, I could make an 8-for-1 trade. With the way the CBA is set up, like you just can't – the Celtics are very handicapped by the salary cap and the second apron that they're in. So they can only do so much. Brad is – Nothing but impressive. His shorts and his GM. He's been spectacular.
We'll get right back to Forsberg. Quick break though, because listen, Super Bowl's coming. I know you can bet on basketball, and we'll have plenty of basketball betting conversation in the weeks and months to come. But right now, it's all about betting football. So Ev, let's shout out FanDuel.
We only really get one more shout out of Kaufman, so make it count, everybody.
That's our Super Bowl as bettors.
Yes, that's right. It's everybody's. It's not just Super Bowl gambling too. Happy Super Bowl to all who celebrate from FanDuel, America's number one sports book. If you're like me, if you're like Kaufman, Super Bowl Sunday is all about scoring the best seat on the couch, grabbing your favorite football snacks, and placing some super bets. And FanDuel has so many ways for you to end the season with a W or two. Or three, depending on when you want to lay down. But not only can you bet who will win Super Bowl 58, but FanDuel also has bets for which players will score a touchdown. Combined yards, rushing, receiving, how many points will be scored, everything, the color of the Gatorade, how many times Taylor Swift, I mean, everything, so much more. But Kaufman, we're going to keep it simple on the one just before the Super Bowl, and we're going to keep it easy. I think, personally, best value bet on the market right now is actually a parlay.
Oh, there's value in a parlay? I'm listening.
Okay. I thought about this all week, thought about 2 weeks.
Okay.
I think Kansas City's going to win this game. Flat out.
I don't like it, but go ahead.
I think Kansas City's going to win the game.
I understand. I just don't like it.
It's just a rare opportunity in life where you're going to get the chance to bet on Pat Mahomes as an underdog in any game at all whatsoever, never mind it being the actual Super Bowl, all right? Right now, on FanDuel, I'm looking at it, Chiefs are +2.5 to win.
Yep.
+2.5, you know, is the spread, +110 money line. If you're like me and you have just belief the Chiefs are going to win this game, so I think about how the Chiefs are going to win this game. Chiefs are going to win this game. This game is very low scoring. 17-14, 17-10. You look at that Ravens game 2 weeks ago. That's the formula. Long drives, defense, don't turn it over. Score when you can, but limit the opposition. Very similar to Tom Brady's first three Super Bowls, right? Chiefs to win on the money line, parlayed with the under of 47.5, Kaufman, +264. How do we feel?
I mean, I don't feel good about it only because I don't believe that the Chiefs are going to win. I'm backing the Niners. But if I were to back Kansas City, then yeah, it makes sense. I feel it. I'm with you.
I don't think if they here's my point. If they win the game, it's not going to be a high scoring game.
Sure.
All right. If the Niners can win a multitude of ways, I think in this game. But I think if the Chiefs are going to win, they're not going to score 40 points. Just not going to happen. I don't think they'll score more than 25. So what I'm hedging is the Chiefs winning this game and not a lot of people scoring a lot of points. And that's why the under is very appealing to me. Plus, juice tends to be on the over anyway. Like, people tend to want that because it's much more fun to see all the points. That's why I like the under. But with that in mind, the +264 that I'm looking at, I think is just fantastic. I know you're on the other side, which makes me feel even better about my picks considering how your luck has gone this year. So with that being said, again, that's my let's keep it short and simple. Bet for the Super Bowl. New customers, join today. You get $200 in bonus bets if you make your first bet of $5 or more, and that wins. Okay, so if you're listening to this right before the Celtics game, somehow bet the Celtics to beat the Wizards. Okay, in just a couple of minutes, and then take those $200 of bonus bets you got because the C's won. Put them all in the Super Bowl. Okay, just visit FanDuel.com/Boston to sign up. That's FanDuel.com/Boston. Make every moment more with FanDuel, the official sportsbook partner of the NFL. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with Kansas Star Casino LLC. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bet that expires 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG in Colorado, Iowa, Kentucky, Michigan, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Tennessee, and Virginia. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona, 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat, Connecticut, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, 1-800-522-4700 or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas, 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana. Visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland. Visit 1800gambler.net in West Virginia or call 800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelplinema.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts or call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York.
All right, let's get back to Forsberg. More Celtics talk.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
So ultimately, Forsberg, would you characterize this as a successful trade deadline for Boston, all of that in mind that we've all been talking about?
So I think the only thing that I thought more and more about as we got closer to the deadline was just you never promised to be in this spot. And it's very rare that you get through 60% of a season. You say, yeah, you're probably definitively the best team in basketball. You know, there's not that you can't say that Denver and the Clippers and there's a couple other like title threats out there, but it's clear like the Celtics are just kind of on that top tier. And sure, they've had moments like that Laker game was terrible, and you know, they've had some more so lately than obviously at the start of the year where it's been they're not quite the juggernaut they were. And yet you sometimes just feel like that's just how it goes in January when you're kind of navigating the schedule. And so the one thing I came away with is always just there have been years where the title favorite makes a move, adds one more piece, and you're like, man, like they got that guy too. Like, how are we going to beat this team? And so, even though the Celtics were a little bit hamstrung by the assets they had available, and certainly, you know, like as Ev said, you can't just cobble together a 6-for-1 trade. But they could have got creative in instances, and I wondered if there was another move out there we could just add it. You know, if you're somewhat on the fence about whether Pritchard and Howes were going to be definitive playoff guys that you can lean on, could you have gotten someone else? And I'm not disappointed that they didn't. I just think you have to do that due diligence. And, you know, we'll never know for sure because they're not going to come out and be like, oh, yeah, we definitely weren't confident in Sam and Peyton. I think they are confident in them. And I think they're hopeful that they hold up well. But I also think, you know, you got to look around. And the one thing that takes some sting out of the fact that they didn't do anything was that no one else did. And so that also suggests that there just wasn't moves out there. Like, Lord knows what the Bulls are doing. I don't know what, like, Golden State is doing. There's like seven teams in the league that I'm just like, what in the hell are you doing? And the teams that did make trades didn't always make great ones. Like, hey, Dallas, what are you doing? So at least the Celtics feel a little bit better about their depth, and no one else made you feel like, ooh, they got that much better. So yeah, I think it's a win, and I think it'll be harder to judge. Can we revisit in 2-3 years when Springer's 24 and we have a better idea if he evolved into anything, if Tillman was able to play a rotation role this season or next? Like, we'll know better then. But I really love the idea of throwing Tillman into an ecosystem that already has Al Horford. I love the idea of Springer, you know, coming to play with Drew alongside and Derek and like two really good defending guards. Like, I feel like there's a real chance for them to learn on the job and then maybe emerge as something.
I was surprised, you know, you're talking about Dallas to see there was an ESPN report. Was it Tim McMahon? McMahon was talking about the Grant Williams deal and said that they couldn't wait to get rid of him. Apparently Grant was rubbing some people the wrong way in the organization. And look, I Grant, you know, on a more of a personal, at least professional level. I've probably had one conversation with him ever, so I wouldn't sit here to claim to know him. He seems so beloved with the Celtics. And, you know, I've heard people like our guy, John Zanis here, refer to Grant as, you know, yeah, we know Grant's an acquired taste, that sort of thing. But he always kind of was described or came off as the annoying younger brother who doesn't shut up kind of.
Yeah, I was gonna say, do you have siblings, Kaufman?
Yeah, no.
You ever want to take a pillow and just smother them for a little bit?
Like, right, but there's a big difference between that and like rubbing people the wrong way.
Yeah, but I think that
this guy.
I just think that's how it is in the league. It's just, you know, like Kyrie gets sick of everybody and. Yeah. You know, I think if you're Luka, you're probably have high expectations. This was your big splash this offseason, and Grant started really good and then just couldn't make a shot. And so I think that's what frustrates you, is that combination of he's not playing to the level that the contract you gave him, and he's a loud personality. So it's like, man, how about this guy does something before he's yapping like this? And so, yeah, like I think when you know it and when you've proven it, like you're in Boston, probably easier to deal with the Grant Williams experience. I think we all knew that he was going into a pretty hostile situation or volatile at the very best. And I didn't think he'd be the first one to get booted out of it. But you know, I don't profess to know exactly what Dallas is doing, because they've now paid a lot of assets and money to, I don't know if they improved. Like, I like PJ Washington, and we always had a lot of Grant PJ Washington talk on our network. But at least I know Grant can do it in a playoff series. Mm. And so PJ Washington hasn't played a whole lot of big games in his career, and I'd be interested to see how it plays out. I like Gafford. I think that's really good for them. But I don't know. Did they move the needle at all? You know, like,
I mean, not in the West.
Right.
You know,
they're still a seven seed, eight seed in the West. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, that as I look around the league and I say, like, well, how many teams improved at the deadline? I'd say maybe the Knicks.
I was going to say Knicks probably had the best day, you know, bringing in.
If you want to include pre-draft the deadline deals, then I would throw the Heat in there. I would probably throw Indiana in there. And yet, like, nothing that made you think that the teams in what I would call tier two in the East are any closer than they were. Like, you know, you're looking in your rearview mirror and maybe you see the Knicks a little closer, but, you know, they're gritty, but they don't have the star power. So, yeah, I think that just tempers everything with the deadline in terms of there just wasn't a lot out there to do. And if you were going to tinker on the fringes, I feel like the Celtics did about as good as they could have done. And, like, the jury will be out for a little bit on it.
So to that point, I'm curious how you feel about this. It's more of a big picture conversation, but this is more of a big picture show coming at you, you know, once, twice a week. Before we started taping here, I was watching Pat McAfee, and they had Shyam Charania on, which just the media politics of that always sort of makes me chuckle a little bit. But putting that aside, Shams was on, and they were talking about the trade deadline. They were talking about the Celtics and, you know, a lot of the stuff that we're saying. This is the team. And a lot of people going back to the regular season want to have that title or bust conversation. How do you determine whether or not the year's been a success and all of that? And certainly there's a school of it's a lazy narrative. It's stupid. It requires nuance in that conversation.
Is it a wrong narrative? Point,
you know, like if Jason Tatum, heaven forbid, suffers a season ending injury next week, then it's hard to classify this year as title or bust. So you're projecting health, obviously, whenever you're having that conversation. But where Shams was going with this, which I just hadn't really heard people leap to this yet, you know, they've already paid a boatload to Brown. They're going to Tatum. They gave Porzingis the extension. Holiday's up for one. You'd think they'd like to pay him, obviously. You know, you're talking about bird rights for Tillman. Derek White wants a contract. You'd like to pay him. They paid Pritchard. All these guys, like, they, you expect ownership to spend and keep this core together and try and chase titles. And Shams was basically saying, if they don't win this year, they're going to have some really difficult conversations. They're going to have to, you know, there are some real decisions that are going to have to be made if this year somehow doesn't result in Banner 18. And that wasn't even, you know, you could go to the title round and lose it, whatever. Sure. You don't win, they have decisions to make. To what degree do you agree with that?
So I would flip it and say if they win, they have tough decisions to make. Like, they get a little easier, right? Like, you have this banner and all of a sudden the decision to pay Drew Holiday long term is probably a little bit easier to make. But, like, you're still going to have tough decisions about how this roster goes forward. I think when they added Porzingis, we all said it's like eventually they're going to have to pick what's the new core, you know? And if you're lucky and the salaries all kind of line up, maybe you're lucky to bring this forward for a couple more seasons. But yeah, like, so I think if they don't win, there's a hard conversation about, like, why isn't this working? Like, why hasn't this core gotten to the finish line? And maybe there'll be something extenuating that just says, you know, Kristaps had been a little bit healthier, if Drew had done this, whatever the case may be, and maybe just run it back with what you've got, because even though it gets slightly more prohibitive next year as Jalen's deal kicks in, there'll be some easing, right? Like, you know, some of the variables change, and so I just think in general they have tough decisions, and I'll be fascinated to see how it plays out. Like, Drew's, I think April 1st is the day, 6 months, you know, so before the playoffs, you might have to decide, you know, you'd probably love to tell him, hey, you know, let's not make this a distraction. Let's just get through the playoffs. I don't know if you'll have that luxury, but the fact that he has a $37 million option or whatever it is, you know, he's got a pretty good safety net if he doesn't get a new extension. But certainly as you're trying to figure out how you're going to cram Derek in there and with Jalen's contract set to explode, you just gotta start looking ahead to that. And, credit to ownership. 'Cause I remember sitting here and thinking, man, they got Jalen and Jason now. It's going to be almost impossible to add. They're going to have to kind of keep this core. And they were like, no, let's add Kristaps. Let's add Drew. So they've been willing to pay, and it's going to get really difficult next year when roster construction gets so tough. You know, not being able to send out money, no aggregation in trades. Like, it just gets really restrictive. So that's why you're making moves now, because you need some parts around this core, and you got to figure it out with this core. But I don't think it's like, oh my gosh, if they don't win, all of a sudden now it's just like exponentially more difficult. No, these conversations are coming one way or another.
Yeah, and that's the beauty that we've been having, like, this conversation about ownership for, I don't know, years, Kaufman, to this point. Like, I'll believe Wick when the time happens and, you know, they have to make tough decisions. He's always said he'll pay for a contender, and this is it. Like, this is the time. I am curious to see how it all shakes out. The one thing I'll say, though, this is to piggyback off a quote that you got earlier, Forsberg, about just, like, the way this team vibes and gels and the chemistry with this team. It's obvious this team loves playing with each other. It's like, this is a group of guys that loves showing up to work every day, loves going to battle with each other every single day, you know, and all the minutiae that comes with being on a team. You know, sometimes that 82 game schedule can be a grind, especially when you have guys that are awesome in your club clubhouse or your locker room, whatever you want to call it. Right. You know, Grant Williams might wear some guys out. Okay. Marcus Smart might wear some guys out. Now, we love both of those guys here in Boston because they bring other things to the table and we can look past some certain things. But this team really, I mean, just feels like they're best buds all the time. The vibes in the bench are, as we all say, immaculate, right? They're, you know, the cookies and cream thing took one second for them to, like, come up with. It's, you know, there's camaraderie, real camaraderie on this team. And so as you look towards the future of what this might look like, as long as I think having Jalen, Jason, Kristaps, and one of the White Drew pieces, and I think it's going to be White over Drew because of the age and all that other, you know, and that stuff, I think they're going to be all right. This seems like guys that are easy to play with. And when it comes from the top, because it's coming from the top, it's coming from Jason, it's coming from Jalen, it's easier for everybody else to fall in line. There's structure now, right? getting rid of certain guys throughout the years, Chris, I think has made this easier for everyone now to kind of fall in line behind the two Jays. And when everybody's falling in line, it's like, it's beautiful. This is amazing, you know?
I think it comes down to Jason and Jalen just, I think they've hit the point of their career. Like, everyone has the same trajectory, right? Like, you come into the league, oh, I want to be an all-star, and then you want all-NBA, you want to be superstar, you want to be in that MVP conversation, all that stuff. Like, they've hit a lot of the individual accolades, and now it's clear, like, all they want to do is win. And they came in early, got into training camp, set the tone of, hey, we just want to work, we're going to figure this out. They know all the scrutiny that they face goes away as soon as they win, and now they're going to have to deal with it. They deal with it every time, like, when they don't get, you know, hit the winning shot or make the right play at the end, then we all say, like, hey, why can't they get there? But I think they've set the tone of, like, it's all that matters is winning. And the fact that they both sacrificed scoring-wise, the fact that they've just embraced the new pieces and been okay with, like, the roles that those guys play has just made it easy for everybody to fall into line. And I think that's why Brad loves this group, is that from Al on the first day being like, yo, I'll go play on the bench. And just kind of everything slotted into place. You had no one's rocking the boat. It's very rare that you have a team that where it feels legitimately like everybody is pulling in the same direction. And this one feels like it. And that's why when I, you know, sat down with Brad today, I understood, like, you know, a lot of people said to me, oh, I didn't think they were trading any of the top six, but I did think you could add a piece. You know, that's going back to the big move idea. People were like, well, it could disrupt the chemistry. And I get it, right? Like, you bring in someone who is more focused on themselves than the team. Yeah, that could have gone wrong. So it was clear Brad put a premium on. Like, Tillman comes in and he's saying all the right things. I'm sure Jaden Springer, when we talk to him, will say the same things. And as long as that's the case, that's fine. It's funny to me, though, because, like, Svi Mihailuk, one of the quietest guys we've ever had on Media Day, doesn't say a lot, you know, didn't joke around, just kind of dry. And every time I look over, like, Jason Tatum's hanging out with him on the bench, and I think Jalen and Porzingis took him to Miami with O'Shea during one of the off days. I'm like, man, even the quiet dude on the team, they just love. Like, they're like, Svi's our guy, and they're just taking him everywhere. So I don't know. Like, yeah, the whole vibes thing is legit over there, that everyone understands what's at play here. And I think a lot of those end-of-the-bench guys think the same thing, too. Like, yeah, it sucks not to play, but you're on a championship-level team. Would you rather be in Detroit? Would you rather be going out to Portland with Delano Banton? Shout out, Rob. I miss you. The fact that they gave out number 44 is a little bit hurtful, but I'll get through this. And yeah, like, I just think it does matter. All that stuff matters. And, you know, somehow we got way away from your question about, you know, future decisions. But the fact of the matter is they're a championship level team now, and you figure all that stuff out as you go. But I feel a lot better about it than I did in, like, 2019 when Al was like, I'm sick of this. I'm out of here. And, you know, things came unglued pretty quickly.
Well, and there's an element of life comes at you fast, right? What was it, 2017, 2018, when Jalen, you know, high top Jalen at the time, did that interview with Taylor Rooks and said they were going to win like five out of the next six titles or something.
He might have been bragging a little bit in that segment.
Yeah, maybe it was a little bit of trying to impress her.
I was going to say, I can get why. I can understand why. Yeah. I get it.
Look, in his shoes, understood. But, you know, the fact is they haven't won yet. And so, you know, yes, there have been individual accolades. There have been some team achievements. There have certainly been some big paydays, but they don't have the banner. And as Tatum has said a number of times, Brown has alluded to it as well. Smart, when he was here, certainly knew it, you know, to be considered. I know we had this conversation with Washburn when he was on with us last week. We were talking all about guys who could or should have their numbers, you know, up in the rafters. But to be considered a Celtics all-time great, you need the ring, man. Like, you need the banner. And obviously, you know, that in and of itself doesn't define that that level of prestige. But
it has to be
way.
Like, you have to at least tick that box to be in the conversation.
Right.
Yeah, like, I mean, I don't even know how it's a non-starter if you don't have a ring. I don't, you know, I don't even know, like, what the – I love Marcus. I love Marcus as much as anybody. I just can't, like, I was kind of wild, like, by the suggestion. I get it. He meant a lot to Boston, to everybody. We can love Marcus Smart. It's a lot of jerseys up there. I don't know if Marcus Smart –
And the majority of them have rings attached to them. That's your problem.
I jokingly, and I don't, because I don't want this to come off as a slight on Smart, but Because I'm as high of a Marcus Smart fan as you could get during his time here. I loved the moment and being able to celebrate that. But are we putting Luke Kornet up there? He's been to like three Eastern Conference Finals. He was in the finals,
right?
You know, was he not important?
He also changed the game with the Kornet contest. So
exactly. Yeah. So you know, and but yeah, I just think we have to have some baselines for guys that go up there. And so when Smart comes back as part of the five or six titles the Celtics are going to win, as Jaylen Brown said,
right?
Then we can get into whether he deserves a spot up there. But look, Jaylen, I think they're going up there, but I got some work to do. So you know, let's we'll judge at the end of all this when you know when Brad's up there, when Joe's up there, when Danny Ainge is up there. Like right. We got some work.
That's the thing. Like that stuff isn't automatic. Like if. You know, obviously, like, especially because of the contracts they, you know, either have or will sign, like, we project Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, like, we would love to see them here for 15 years. And, yeah, you're going to get a lot of numbers along the way. But if Jason Tatum were just, you know, done as a Celtic today, he hasn't done enough to be up there.
Someone had a I brought this up on our postgame show after the – what game was it? It must have been the Grizzlies game. There was a guy behind the bench. He had a sign. It said, zero – greater than 33, and then he flipped it over and it said like eventually, and all right, like where your head's at, get what you're saying, maybe don't bring Larry Bird into this quite yet, like yes. I'm not ready to go there. Yeah, like well-intentioned, definitely an eye-catching sign, probably could have just been like really like you Jason Tatum.
God, we are just prisoners of the moment. All right, so we've got you a couple more minutes because I know you get stuff to do. But what, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of discussion in the weeks to come regarding that open roster spot.
Oh man, do people love open roster spots?
I mean, we hear.
I don't know why I bothered asking about Tillman or anybody today. I should have just been all like all buyout guy the time, even though I don't know if they're gonna...
Who do you think you'll be targeting on that buyout market? You know, and the best way to ask, as you know, I don't need to tell you this, but the best way to ask Brad those questions to where he might actually answer them is not obviously what guy do you want. It's, you know, Brad's a big type guy. Brad, so what type of guy would you like to see fill out that last roster spot in the buyout market should said individual become available? And then he might give you a little something. Brad has no
he did
problem.
Not. I think I said, is there still a position of need that you might be kind of like eyeing, just trying to get a hint on what they might do? And I'm pretty sure he was just like, yeah, we're not going to be in a rush. We're just going to, because I think they do want to look at it.
Yeah.
So, okay, Tillman comes in. If Tillman comes in, he's great depth. And now you've got Tillman and Luke and Kata. Like, do you really need another big man? Probably
right.
not. So that probably takes a good amount of the people you might be targeting off the board. If Springer comes in and is ready and you can give you at least a little bit, maybe you don't need another big guard. Like if Tillman can be versatile, do you need? So I think they want to get a look at it. You can always elevate Kata and just take him into the playoffs with you, so that you don't run into the two way restrictions. And you also reward a player and show like. I think it would also be good because then you can say to any future two-way signing, like, look, Sam Hauser, Nemish Kata, both were two-way guys. We brought them up because they did enough in the early days that we were like, we need them on our roster. And so now you're giving motivation to those guys to come join you in Maine. And I don't think that's the worst path because I don't know if necessarily there's someone out there. Now, the names that are invariably going to come up and maybe we'll all be bought out and signed before the, you know, you even get this edited and put online. But I will say, I'll start with Danilo Gallinari. I thought it was hilarious. Someone had a tweet last night. I forget if it was Shams or Woj or whoever, but like they were like, Danilo Gallinari is getting bought out and he will start his free agent visits. I was like, who is welcoming Danilo Gallinari at age like 38 and being like, let us tell you why you would be a perfect fit for this program. I don't know if that's the perfect fit for the Celtics either. It would. It'd be nice to see him go full Cody Rhodes and finish the story. But yeah. I do not know if that is going to be something that the Celtics are interested in. The guy I would probably want in among the names is Otto Porter Jr. I thought that was someone they should have like been kind of eyeing out of Toronto at the trade deadline. He obviously goes to Utah. If Danny Ainge does you a favor and sets him free, guy with championship experience, still younger than you think, versatile forward, can play multiple positions. Like, I think that's what you're looking for. Someone that in an emergency can get you some minutes. After that, I don't know. Like, does Thad Young end up bought out? People say Seti Osman. I don't know if like Seti's going to get set free. Like, he might just want his bird rights and they're ride it out in San Antonio. So,
is your problem though with all these guys? Like, other teams are going to offer them more playing time. That's your problem with the Celtics. Yeah. Why ultimately I think it's probably going to be Kata, just because you look at all the guys you mentioned, was Gallo or whether it was Otto or what, like, none of those guys are going to really play. Like, is Otto Porter going to get more playing time than Sam Hauser, who's been here for 2 years? Like, I just don't think so. Like, I just don't think he adds anything. Like, is he a better movement shooter than Hauser? Not from what I've been watching. No. Like, I mean, Hauser's been unreal this year. And think about what that does to the team morale. We keep coming back to this team morale thing and how the chemistry is really great. I think an underrated part of what you just said is you can show this to future two-way guys. Like, hey, play your ass off. Like, it got Sam Hauser a roster spot and eventually a rotation spot. It got Kata a roster spot, and we looked at him and then, you know, see what happens at the end of this thing. I would much rather have that because, like, again, I don't think if – let's say the Knicks. I don't know what the Knicks roster situation is. So I'm not going to sit here and say, like, I know everything. However, the Knicks are a team, if I were, like, Otto Porter Jr. and they had an open roster spot, I could be like, oh, I can go make a real big impact on that team, which could get me another contract after this. You're not getting us another – the idea – you. Maybe with Gallo would make sense because he's older and it's like, just get a rank, buddy. Let's get you one and get you out of here and off of the sunset. You can go do spaghetti westerns back in Italy and have a great time. You know, like that's maybe the saving grace there. But I just don't see the problem the Celtics have is the rotation's pretty set. And now they added two guys, mainly one in Tillman, who could really carve his way into that rotation. Springer's going to be whatever. Mm-hmm. So now it's even harder because there's one more body in there that's going to be fighting for playing time. Like, I just don't see it. I just don't see it. And it's just a testament to how well Brad and Mike and Austin have done in building this team. This team is pretty sound from player one to player 14. I think
Kaufman, you got
interesting. Kaufman,
do you have a championship chaser that you want?
I have to wait for them all to get bought out.
It's tough in the moment. I'll tell you, like, we were trying to do it last night on the program.
The only one that I mentioned to Washburn last week is I wonder if they'll attempt to go full PJ Brown with Blake Griffin.
Yeah, I thought that for much of the year, and every time I was told to not hold my breath. So
yeah,
I think I think his back would not allow him to play basketball much of last year's playoffs, and I just think. Now you're out for a year. I do think that's like the ideal prototype of what you needed to fill those kind of roles. Selfless guy who's been through it, guy who actually was a positive when he was out there, could defend Blake, all that. There's not a lot of them out there. What is Semi Ojeleye up to? Can he still give us like 7 minutes of defense? Is he still lifting weights? And
I was going to say, can give everybody at least a little bit of some competition.
Somebody on Giannis just for a few minutes a game. No. Which, by the way, and we do have to go, we did not get an opportunity to talk about the disaster in Milwaukee since Doc took over. And that doesn't mean they're not going to figure it out. Obviously, Doc is himself trying to figure it out. But my God, they've got problems there. And I am gleefully hoping for the second round playoff exit. I'm sure it won't happen. They'll still be in the conference finals. But man, I would just love to watch this team come up short.
It was I had to do a top five East rivals that I'm most scared of coming out of the deadline. And I wrestled with it. I wanted to put New York number one, but I felt like it was recency bias and because they had the most sexy deadline in adding Burks and Bogdanovich. But I put the Bucks there because I know it's a mess right now and we're laughing at it. Like, do it now because they still got Giannis and Lillard still is crazy and I don't think Pat Beverly's going to move the needle that much, but man, beggars can't be choosers. So they're going to get a little bit better defensively and Doc is going to have some time. And I feel like he's got to have some sort of tangible impact on that. I know he can't go out there himself and play defense, but while I'm still leery of the Bucks' complete ability to navigate this because of their poor defense, I can't write off Giannis and Dame. And so I will continue to be weirdly frightened by them. And I will be like the Knicks. I look at them and say, don't have the star power to necessarily make me scared either. And We'll see what happens with the Sixers. Buddy Hield, fully targetable when he's on the court. Whatever he gives you scoring wise, it's not going to change it there. So I still feel really good about where the Celtics are in the East. And yeah, I guess I'll be Bucks are fascinating, super fascinating to me. Adrian Griffin must be loving them going 1-5 with Doc and being like, see, right, it was now. Not me.
They're the problem. The players are the problem. Listen, until further notice, and it might be years, there is no team that I'm going to fear more in the East than the Miami Heat. That's just the one. It's, you know, PTSD for Miami year in, year out, until this team, you know, gets over the hump and wins its first title since
we get that on Sunday, baby. Let's see. Super Bowl appetizer.
Jeez. Yeah, you know what? Let's go with that. We've done ours. What's your official Super Bowl pick?
Oh, I have to go with KC. Amina Smith, our studio host, her husband plays for the Chiefs. And so, whatever gets, it's funny. I even told her, I said, it's hard because people here in Boston are somewhat conflicted about the Chiefs, right? Because like Mahomes is getting a lot of, he's on Brady's level. And we all know that's not true, but it's an annoying narrative. So it's not that I root against them. It's just that I don't like that the conversation gets a little bit pricklier to have. But yeah, go ahead, Chiefs. Go get one.
I root against them, but I also don't work with Amina, so I can. Chris Forsberg from NBC Sports Boston. We always love having you, my friend. Go do your TV stuff. I promise we will be watching. We just like to razz you a little bit, but we'll have you back on again real soon.
I appreciate you all.
All right. For Chris, for Evan, I am Adam. Enjoy the Celtics these couple of days. We'll be back at you again next week after the football season has officially come to an end. It's all about basketball at that point in time. We'll see you.